from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
Williams, pressure coming. He felt it. Looked, saw it, evaded it. Still on the move. Looking around. Williams is going to take off for the end zone.
It's like it's its own playground. That field is his playground.
We're back with more of the Score Afternoon Show with Matt Spiegel and Anthony Herron on Sports Radio 670 The Score and live on the free Odyssey app.
Thank you so much, Rick Party. In an hour, we will talk to Chris Emma about Bears practice today, and we will hear from Matt Eberflus. You'll hear about Montez Sweat and more. And a little bit in the 5 o'clock hour, we'll touch on the former Cubs superstar who is back in town. He's going to be spending a whole week in town, as a matter of fact. But interesting conversation with Paul Papst from the Dan Patrick Show, and he said that he doesn't care about success team-wise. He just wants to know they have the guy. And I think that is not the correct perspective for this particular Bears season. Before we get to some of these other young quarterbacks, just want to get you on the record. I think this is a win now team who has, you know, with a team that has been built to take advantage of quarterback on a rookie deal. I'm not saying they have to be what the Texans were with CJ Stroud, or they have to be what the Niners were with a rookie Colin Kaepernick, or what they have to be what Seattle was with a rookie Russell Wilson, but that's three examples in the last decade about what's possible when your defense is really good and when the whole roster around you is good and you're coached with discipline. So, to me, this is a win now moment for the Bears. And I think 10 wins is completely within the realm of what to hope for and expect. And that my gauge of success is on winning this year right now.
And I think, you know, go back even a little further than that to, you know, Ben Roethlisberger on his rookie deal. And, you know, I think that there's been a variety of quarterbacks. So Flacco on his rookie deal. I mean, it certainly has happened before when a team, regardless of how historic the talents of the quarterback is perceived, that opportunity to take advantage of that window of time when you got the extra money to spend, it's beneficial to the organization when you can do it. And there are additional factors in that beyond just the QB rookie deal. You have a head coach. I mean, one of the concerns that I had, that I'm sure I heard other people voice as well, was you're going to have a coach in his third season. This is a win-it year for Matt Eberflus. Not win at all, but prove you can coach. Prove you can win games at a high level in leading the Bears. Mm-hmm. And, you know, his job security will come into question if they're not achieving at a high level this year in a more realistic way, in a more plausible way than it did early last season. And between Eberflus in year three and Caleb and the additional money that's got spent, Ryan Poles has put a roster together that should have big expectations regardless of how deep the division is.
I think so, absolutely. And you've got a quarterback who, while of course he needs to get better and learn the ways of the NFL, is not a developmental prospect in the way that Justin and Mitch were. It doesn't appear to be a developmental prospect who, like, needs to learn how to do certain things, you know, from the ground up.
He's certainly a better prospect than either one of them.
Yeah, but it's like, I mean, so look, I want him to develop, but that is not the principal focus of this season to me. I mean, watching him and seeing him grow will be fun, and I'll be very passionately interested, but I want to watch this team compete and win games.
I do feel like, and I don't think you're alone in this regard, I do think yours and a lot of people's perspective are reshaped a bit by CJ Stroud from last year. There's such a recent example of a rookie quarterback coming in and being able to win at a high level that now it's just got that at the forefront of our minds, so much more readily available to say, oh, it's possible. Like, that can happen. And maybe we have one of those guys. You know, Caleb Williams is regarded higher than C.J. Stroud was when he came out of the draft. C.J. wasn't even the number one pick in last year's draft cycle. So if he can do that with that team, why can't Caleb do something similar with this team? But the situations are still even slightly, but they are different between the two.
Okay, well, we can talk about that. Lord knows that's the backdrop for this moment of optimism and this moment of expectation is finding the nuance there of, like, are you about the quarterback expectation? Are you about the team expectation? After those things have been battling.
I shudder to assume too much about Caleb's rookie season success. Even him being impressive through a couple of preseason games, I'm still hesitant to just, like, think that, well, yeah, remember that first year Mahomes started? He was kind of a rookie, right? But he wasn't kind of a rookie. He was a second-year quarterback who had gotten to sit behind greatness, but, and gotten, like, to be trained by one of the best of all time.
But I remember last year in the offseason when everybody was, like, hoping for Justin Fields to take the leap, and if he did, what could happen and everything. I remember talking with people and being like, all right, so what do you think? Like, oh, this could be 10 wins. I said, you'd take 7 wins and feeling good about the quarterback. And they all said, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely I would. I don't think Bears fans will be happy with 7 wins and feeling good about the quarterback. Not when, like, Poles has had so much time to build this team and this defense is supposed to be better than that.
Yeah, I think that's mostly true. Like, if Caleb is really scintillating and they win 7 games, that's still going to be a nice feeling to fall back on. Kind of the Joe Burrow thing, the Justin Herbert thing, that'll still be there. If you get a scintillating Caleb that for some reason in this deep division, he can't, like, out-duel Detroit in the second half of the year and can't out-duel Green Bay in the second half of the year. But, man, was he good and the Bears only won 7 or 8 games and missed the playoffs. I could see that being palatable for this year. But in the end, will that keep Matt Eberflus's job? I think that's still a separate conversation.
Sure it is.
Because there are legit expectations with the squad.
You know what it sounds like? It sounds like a thought experiment.
Who used to like those?
I don't know.
This show, there was an element of this show that used to really enjoy.
Who?
Thought experiment.
What are you talking about?
I don't know. Something about it feels familiar.
You're listening to Spiegel & Company right here on 670 The Score. Anthony Herron is first up yesterday and today. Gabe Ramirez tomorrow. All right. So talk to me about Caleb's preseason that we have seen, and we've learned earlier today that it is now complete. Okay?
Boo!
I know. And then talk to me about Jaden Daniels' preseason, because Jaden Daniels just had, 78 yards, completed 10 of 12 and 13 yards on the ground on a couple of carries. They're feeling great in Washington. And we can talk about Bo Nix as well. Nix has been leading the Broncos on 6 different scoring drives, 23 of 33 for 205 and 2 touchdowns with no picks. And Bo Nix real good his last time out, 8 of 9 for 80 yards and a touchdown, also 3 carries for 12 yards. So you've got at least 3 quarterback towns, as Anthony works diligently to unhook his microphone cable from the chair and then resumes his place in the chair. Anthony's sitting back in the chair. It's 4:10 here on 670 The Score. That's my play-by-play chops getting a workout. Here. I mean, I'd like to hear Pat Hughes doing play-by-play of Ron Coomer getting in and out of his chair.
Maybe he has.
I bet he has. Pat Hughes doing play-by-play of Ron Santo's hair being on fire when his toupee caught on fire. It's one of the all-time greatest pieces of tape that has ever existed.
Okay.
Yeah. And one
I look forward to hearing that.
One of the greatest things of all time.
Okay.
But anyway, should Bears fans and Commanders fans be in the same kind of boat? And is it getting received that way? I look to your NFL institutional knowledge for your thoughts.
Because of what the Bears are to the sports world, because of the way they move the meter, I think we almost don't appreciate it enough in this town how much interest there is in the Bears beyond Chicago. I mean, there's a reason where we kind of joked about it on this station a decent amount in recent years of, like, oh, why are the Bears getting all these national TV games? Why early in the season they're getting Monday Night Football and Sunday Night Football? They're opening up on this channel and that channel. It's because the nation deeply cares about the Bears. The Bears are consumed in a way that if there is sustained success from the Bears, then they'll be the squad that every debate show can't stop talking about endlessly, because they are such an interesting brand, such a historic brand that just haven't achieved at that level consistently. And so now there's this opportunity here. And for Caleb, he seems more than capable emotionally and mentally to handle that, to sustain that.
That's been incredibly impressive. Yeah. And I would agree with that assessment.
And he's going to be tasked with shouldering that in a different way than his other top 10 pick teammate, Rome Odunze, like we discussed a bit yesterday, but differently than any other quarterback who was drafted in this cycle as well. And that's one of the differences between the situation he's in and Jaden Daniels, or the situation he's in and Bo Nix, because he's with Chicago and because he's with a team that has had a roster that's been built over multiple seasons and a head coach that himself seemingly has been in the process of developing over multiple seasons and now has an organization that moved on from the last offensive coordinator and now has brought this guy in who's tasked with developing him. And so there's expectations that will fall on the team as a whole and fall on Caleb individually, where the other quarterbacks of this cycle and really the last couple of cycles will pale in comparison to how they're perceived versus the expectations that accompany Caleb Williams.
So Jaden Daniels has a softer landing because of the expectations and because of the national glare.
Very much so. The harsh national glare that comes with being the Bears quarterback and being Caleb Williams as the Bears quarterback because of all the acclaim he brought into this circumstance. And you know, no one following the Commanders, there's not the depth of passion, the depth of consumption in Washington for what Jaden Daniels is doing. Like him being announced the starter the other day, I mean, he's an NFL quarterback. He was a Heisman winner. So, I mean, it gets headlines, but they don't move the meter. There's not this moment-by-moment following of every move that Jaden Daniels makes in the same way.
I think locally there is, in terms of Washington, knowing my sister lived in D.C. for a while, and knowing some Washington media folks, I think there is a used-to-be Redskins, now Commanders obsession of sorts. I think it was damaged by the Daniel Snyder ugliness, but that part is gone. So there's a bit of a local obsession, but certainly not the national obsession right, like you're talking about, and certainly not the expectations of competition and at least decency, if not winning. People expect the Bears to be decent and to be competitive without a doubt. And
Jaden
Washington
Daniels
is not that
has
way.
A QB room with Marcus Mariota in it, who's viewed as the guy who we were kind of wondering, would the Bears accompany Caleb Williams with some veteran who's already sort of past his prime, who's had his window and missed that opportunity? Yeah. Would he get the old head who could come in and just sort of help nurture his talents along? Jaden Daniels has that in Washington for Marcus Mariota, a guy who's still capable, but he's not a threat to Jaden Daniels to be the future of that organization. Caleb doesn't have that. In Chicago, he comes in, and day one, they say, you're the guy. It was the right call. It makes sense. You don't need to mess around with a guy like Caleb Williams in here in this franchise, this roster that's ready to roll right now. Mm-hmm. But it's different than the situation Jaden was in Washington, where he was tasked with competing, quote unquote, and he earned the job. And there's something to be said for how that impacts the locker room to see him have to play well before being named the starter.
So from the psychological perspective of what Caleb is expected to do and deal with and what Jaden Daniels is expected to do and deal with, don't you think, because I do, that a quarterback can crumble in absolutely any market? That a quarterback can be overwhelmed by the ask of the position, the demands of the position, and the glare of even just the local market. And if they don't have it, they don't have it. And they can, especially as rookies, I'm talking about developing as rookies. Maybe it's a different thing if you've been somewhere with a massive following and then you leave there and you go somewhere that's smaller and you have a different level of expectations. But like, I mean, Johnny Manziel was going to implode in Cleveland just as he would have imploded in Los Angeles.
Right.
You know, like that dude was due to implode. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the makeup that we're seeing in Caleb, like he's gonna handle it here as he would have handled it in Jacksonville.
Yeah. If Caleb doesn't succeed here, I don't believe it'll be because of the pressure. You know, I don't think he seems wired in a way where he'll be able to handle that harsh glare of expectation.
He was just the returning Heisman winner in Los Angeles.
Right.
You know,
right.
And played at a pretty damn high level.
Now, by comparison between Jaden and Caleb on the field, though, I feel like what I expected is playing out so far just through a couple of preseason appearances that they've each had. where their style of play, even though they're both multidimensional talents, Jaden Daniels is a guy who can extend the play, who can take off and run at an extremely high level, even more mobile, more straight line speed than Caleb has. But the refinement of his skills for the amount of football he played in college, being a guy who played 5 years, being not only a Heisman Trophy winner, but a guy who was with multiple offensive systems, didn't just have the one head coach at two stops like Caleb did. Jaden had to learn multiple offensive systems in college and just played so many snaps of college football from his true freshman season on through the time where he finished at LSU. And that matters. That time on task is a part of what the refinement of Jaden Daniels' game, I think, has showed up from within the pocket in a different and enhanced way versus what we've seen from Caleb.
Yeah, it'd be fascinating to know and worth checking in on some of these other football markets where the young quarterback is there, like what they're seeing, you know, because do we feel as good about Caleb from the pocket and going through progressions and, you know, identifying pass rushers, moving guys around? Do they feel as good about that stuff with Jaden Daniels and Bo Nix right now? Are they seeing enough of that, or are they seeing a little bit more of the swashbuckling, freewheeling, making plays on the fly thing? Because we're also seeing that with Caleb.
Yeah, Jaden Daniels so far in Washington in the preseason hasn't shown a whole lot of swashbuckling. Yeah, he's taken off and run a few times, but not much. He is as refined from the pocket as Bo Nix or any of his other contemporaries in this cycle, as Drake May, even more so. You know, like the comparison I was making between Caleb and Jaden when they came out, Caleb has a higher ceiling, but Jaden does have a very high ceiling and is more refined in his game because he's just played more. Between the two of them from the opening game this season, Jaden, I believe, will be the guy who shows more comfort within the pocket, who shows more consistency within the pocket than Caleb. I do feel like Caleb has certainly shown some nice things, some qualities from within the pocket that the Bears will continue to build off of. But what I love about what Shane Waldron has done so far is that he hasn't forced Caleb to just sit in the pocket as this stationary target. He's called him into movement very frequently, far more than the percentage of times Luke Getsy was doing that with Justin Fields or Matt Nagy was doing with Mitchell Trubisky. It's one of these things. It's very simple that for whatever reason, play callers get into this lazy habit of saying, let's force the guy to read the full field, even if they haven't shown they're capable of that in their development yet. Jaden Daniels, all the football he played in college, Tom Brady had some thoughts on that. There's some sound from Tom Brady with him recently just talking about QB development and what he termed as a tragedy in the development of the quarterback, with them being forced onto the field early and the way that the game sort of gets dumbed down to force to play them early because they feel this urge to get them on the field right away. And so with that, then they got to sort of dumb it down to play this collegiate style of football, which doesn't always fail, but it doesn't enhance the way the guy is developed and learning the game early in their careers.
All right, so two items on this, and it speaks in Ann Heron talking through these young quarterbacks with Bo Nix and Jaden Daniels and, of course, our Caleb Williams. In terms of supporting cast, with the Broncos, Javonte Williams, a fine running back. Cortland Sutton, a good wide receiver. I like Cortland Sutton.
Yeah.
Josh Reynolds, the former Lion and the former Ram. Now there as a wide receiver two or three, Tim Patrick there. I mean, it's not what Caleb has here, but it's not garbage.
Uh-huh.
It's not garbage by any stretch. Yeah. In Washington, Jaden Daniels has Brian Robinson Jr. and Austin Eckler there now. I forget that Austin Eckler is there as a running back. And he's got a real legit number one in Terry McLaurin. I love Terry McLaurin. Terry McLaurin gives me DJ Moore vibes. You know, Jahan Dotson there, and then De'Ami Brown is the number three there, along with Jamison Crowder. So in terms of supporting cast, Caleb is a far better supporting cast than either of them, right?
Yep.
You'd credit that. Is it possible that all three of them are hits? Is it possible that we are looking at one of those rare draft classes where all three of them are hits? Or if one of them is a mirage so far, who's the mirage?
But Bo Nix is the guy who I have the least faith in his development arc, just between the three of them. I just don't think he's as good a prospect as either of the other two guys, sort of, you know, regardless of the talent surrounding them. And Caleb not only has the highest ceiling, was the most well-regarded prospect, but is also surrounded by the best talent and is in the best situation. And to be judged by wins and losses and to be judged by statistics, he's in a position that's rare for rookie quarterbacks where he has the potential to achieve both. He has the surrounding cast and the organizational infrastructure that's set up to achieve both. And you don't usually see a rookie quarterback, certainly not a rookie number one overall pick, who's in that scenario where they've really got a chance to do both. There's been rookies who've won at a high level. There's few who've put up huge stats and won at a high level. That's been a rare breed who's been able to do that. And Caleb's in a position where he could maybe do both.
Hey, tonight the Cubs begin their series at home against the Detroit Tigers. Pregame coverage starts right here at 6:30. First pitch at 7:05 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network. Late in the 5 o'clock hour, we will talk about Javi Baez, who's back with the Tigers, and we'll see if Javi speaks over at the ballpark. He has arrived over there. But look, when we come back, I want to continue this conversation about quarterbacks, and let's get into some of that training and some of that teaching and some of that coaching, as it's been in the news of late, with both Caleb and around the NFL. It's Spiegs and Ann Heron on 670 The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
We're back with more of the Score Afternoon Show with Matt Spiegel and Anthony Herron on Sports Radio 670 The Score and live on the free Odyssey app.
Spiegs and Ann Heron indeed. Right here on The Score. Hope everyone is great. Chris Emma at the top of the hour with all the latest from Bears practice. All right, I want to talk to you about some lessons in teaching when it comes to the modern athlete. But before we do that, you referenced this before the break. This is Tom Brady talking about young quarterback development. And Lord knows we've had 7 years of living with and watching young quarterbacks get developed and all those attempts to do so with successes, but mostly failures and who was it on and everything like that. So I'm looking forward to hearing this. This is Brady on how he thinks it's gone for young quarterbacks in the NFL.
There used to be college programs. Now there are college teams. You're no longer learning a program. You're learning a playbook. And the program is ultimately, like at Michigan, for me, that was a pro-style program. 5 years, I got to learn how to drop back pass, to read defenses, to read coverages, to be coached. I had to learn from being seventh quarterback on the depth chart to moving up to third to ultimately being a starter. I had to learn all those things in college. That was development. Then I went to New England, and I was developed by Coach Belichick and the offensive staff there. I didn't start my first year. I think it's just a tragedy that we're forcing these rookies to play early. But the reality is the only reason why they are is because we dumbed the game down, which has allowed them to play. It used to be thought of at a higher level. We used to spend hours and hours in the offseason in training camp trying to be a little bit better than next year. But I think what happens is it discourages the coaches from going to deep levels because they realize the players don't have the opportunity to go to a deep level. So they're just going to teach them where they're at.
Makes a lot of sense.
And there's obviously a variety of schools of thought on this. You know, so Tom Brady doesn't have the market cornered on one way to develop a quarterback.
But
correctly.
It fits with what we've seen the Packers do for 35 years.
Sure. But then Joe Burrow, just the other day, when everyone was asking Joe Burrow about Caleb and the Bears situation, Joe Burrow said, yeah, I don't know why people feel like they need to sit and wait or split reps with rookie quarterbacks early in their career. Joe Burrow came in, no mini camps, no OTAs in the COVID season. But again, like I'm talking about with Jaden Daniels, Joe Burrow played so much football in college. Caleb has played 3 years, started for 2 years. He could theoretically be in college two more years before he was actually refined all the way to what he could be in entering the National Football League. So that time on task, uh-huh. the snaps in competitive situations matter a lot.
So I think what's happened here is that the roster building has developed is that there is a demand for special. And this process of forcing the kids in to play right away means that if you're special, like Joe Burrow, and you hope Caleb, we just saw CJ Stroud, if you're special, then you don't need to be developed. Like if you have the wherewithal mentally in terms of processing and really understanding everything, then you won't need it. Now, maybe every once in a while, you'll be succeeding in a dumbed-down offense like Brady's mm-hmm. talking about, and he's 100% right there, but that is more difficult to sustain, right? Like Cam Newton, it was difficult to sustain. Colin Kaepernick, it was difficult to sustain.
Jeff Fisher was Vince Young's head coach in Nashville with the Tennessee Titans. Vince Young was the NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year in 2006 and pretty much never fired another shot in his NFL career. Did not develop beyond that point.
Did not develop. So,
but Jeff Fisher was willing to. And he is not thought of as an offensive head coach in the least. He is laughed at more than any other coach in offensive football circles, more than any other coach of the last 30 years. But that being said, he was willing to say, let's run what Vince Young ran at Texas that made him perhaps the best player in college football last year. He did that during Vince Young's rookie season, and Vince Young was the offensive rookie of the year.
And that's what you have to do if you have a quarterback who you don't think you can develop and you want to play him right away. What's interesting about all of this to me is that the financial structure and the roster building structure of the NFL has made it incredibly advantageous to have a rookie salary at quarterback.
Right.
And so that has ended up like money in all different sports dictating strategy and teaching and acceptability in a negative way in Tom Brady's mind. And I don't think he's necessarily wrong about that in an overall way as you zoom out. And think about it. Most football teams don't want to take the time to do it the way that Brady's describing and do it the way that the Packers did.
Most coaches don't feel they have the time is probably the even more direct way to say it.
Well, but it's both. It's both because like and the GM, if the clock is ticking on him, he needs that coach to succeed.
Yeah.
You know, so you've
part of what we've experienced, right? That incongruent timeline between the head coach and the QB. It's one thing you bring them both in on their first year. It's easier to be patient when you're not expected to win in year one. Matt Eberflus needs to win games this season with his rookie quarterback. As excited as we all are about Caleb, if the Bears start slow again this year, whereas last year in that whatever was 0-4 start, last season, when I'm on this station trying to tell everybody, like, Matt Eberflus isn't about to win his job. Calm down. I don't think that's going to happen. Like, this year, that's going to be harder to say because there's a more reasonable case to make if the Bears start slow this season that maybe Matt Eberflus isn't the guy. I didn't feel that was the case last year, which is why I was pushing back about it then. This year, there's legit heat. There's legit expectation on Flus and on these Bears to win immediately.
Yeah. I know there is. They're definitely... There definitely is, and I think they got lucky and found special. That's the thing. I think they got lucky.
At quarterback?
At quarterback.
Offensive coordinator? Where else?
I don't know.
Because if it's just at QB, that's a lot for him to uplift. Other people have to be good,
sure,
too.
Sure, yeah, but I think they found one. I think they got lucky, and they timed it out in a way. Mm-hmm. And that trade with Carolina and Lovie Smith helping the Texans win and everybody doing what they did, that all those factors have coalesced to help them luck into this incredible situation where they did find the guy who hopefully and seemingly, and I believe, is impervious to the systemic problems that Brady is talking about.
The Chargers found special too, and they ain't won a thing yet.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Well,
Justin Herbert.
And why is that? Why is that?
They've transitioned coaches multiple times now. Mm-hmm. They've transitioned play callers several times at this point. There's a lot that needs to go right in addition to the QB being special. It feels like The Bears are in good shape for that, but right now, with the roster, but right now, Matt Eberflus is still unproven. Shane Waldron, in my estimation, is still unproven. Can he win at a high level as an OC? Can he call an offense that suits this rookie quarterback and the collection of talent that's there for the Bears? I like what I've seen from Shane Waldron in the preseason to accentuate the skills and the current development structure around Caleb Williams, and then just progress from there. We saw the Buffalo Bills, and Bills fans are all kinds of ticked off with their staff there in place right now in Buffalo. The Colts fans right now aren't completely sure what to make of the full roster around Anthony Richardson. I was just in Indianapolis a couple of weeks ago. Everyone's really excited because he's got the Cam Newton build, and he is so mature. Getting to meet him in person, talked to him, interviewed him for NFL radio. Mm-hmm. He is such a more polished guy than I recognized in his demeanor. You know, it leaves very little to be desired. Like, he's not Caleb. He doesn't have the Caleb polish, but he's a very mature guy for someone who didn't play a lot of football in college, hadn't played much football yet in the NFL. But again, there's not the same degree of glare that's on Anthony Richardson in Indianapolis as what Caleb, when every time Caleb Williams looks up at a TV, he's a few minutes away from seeing his own face somewhere. Anthony Richardson isn't living that experience.
You impressed by Richardson?
Very much so. Very much so. Now, he's not nearly as refined and naturally gifted and rhythmic a passer as Caleb is, but he's very talented. I mean, he's got a lot of those Cam Newton physical attributes between the stature, the speed, the strength, and you are going to see a situation there with Shane Steichen where they're going to say, yeah, let's run the football. He's coming off a shoulder surgery that ended his season a month into what was beginning to be an impressive rookie season last year.
Mm-hmm.
They said, we're going to run him. And they're not worried about that. Yeah, they want him to slide. They want him to pick his spots. They're going to utilize those God-given physical attributes that he possesses and play what we now think of as modern football. Yes, what was more of a collegiate structure before. And they'll continue to mold him and help him think the game at a higher level. It's going to be year two in this offensive system for him. They say he's reading the field much better now than he did a year ago. But in the end, yeah, it is still going to be a more simplified structure that puts pressure on the defense with the mobility of Anthony Richardson. We're going to see some of those principles with the Bears, but it's going to be Caleb as a moving pocket, not Caleb as a runner. With the Colts, it's going to be Richardson as a runner. It's going to be pretty dangerous.
Man, that does sound dangerous. Chicago baseball fans, come on out to Four Winds Casino in New Buffalo this Thursday from 4 to 5:30 p.m. for an appearance with Ozzie Guillen and 670 The Score. Ozzie will be doing a meet and greet in the sportsbook area and mingling poolside, so be ready to talk baseball. Chris Emma, top of the hour. Jed Hoyer is going to speak shortly. If there's any news on that, we'll bring it to you in the back half of the 5 o'clock hour. But a quarterback's quotes went viral. They were not from hours, but interesting nonetheless. Let's talk about it with you next on The Score. So yesterday, this sound surfaced from the Miami Dolphins quarterback Tua Tagovailoa.
That should be the theme song for a Skibbity Bobbity, by the way.
You think so?
All I'll do is win.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah. Have all Skibbity. I don't know how they do in Nashville. I don't know whether they do middays or afternoons. I don't even know. When does Skibbity Bobbity work? I don't know. I'll ask.
You got to start scatting, man. I'm trying to tell you.
Skibbity bobbity. I'll ask. I can scat a little bit.
I know you can.
I'll scat for you during the break.
I got faith in you.
Yeah. Thank you, man. Appreciate that. You're the one. So.
It's just a good thing to have in your bag. You know, if you got a little scat in your bag, that's good.
Oh, I thought you meant Anthony's faith is a good thing to have in my bag. Because it is. He's a good man.
I carry my faith with me at all times.
You do? Well, yeah.
It never leaves me.
It's healthy, right?
Yes.
Look at you.
Aside from you heathens, I mean, you guys are a little different.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Who are you calling a heathen?
Are you not a heathen?
This is off the air. Off the air, sir.
We will discuss. To define these things.
We need to define that. We need to define that. No, I don't believe I would qualify.
I had you pegged wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it might have been different about 6-7 months ago, but that's another conversation. Yeah, it's another conversation for another time. It's interesting, right?
Very.
It's a tease.
Color me intrigued.
Consider that a tease for you and I to talk about off the air. Stop derailing
my
football
apologies.
Conversations.
Skibbity bobbity.
I want to talk about Tua.
Skibbity bobbity.
And what he said to Dan Lebatard about his coach now, Mike McDaniel, and his previous coach, Brian Flores.
To put it in simplest terms, if you woke up every morning and I told you you suck at what you did, that you don't belong doing what you do, that you shouldn't be here, that this guy should be here, that you haven't earned this right. And then you have somebody else come in and tell you, dude, you are the best fit for this. Like, you are accurate. You are the best whatever. You are this. You are that. Like, how would it make you feel listening to one or the other? You see what I'm saying? And then you hear it. You hear it, regardless of what it is, the good or the bad. And you hear it more and more. You start to actually believe that. I don't care who you are. You can be the president of the United States. You have a terrible person that's telling you things that you don't want to hear, or that you probably shouldn't be hearing. You're going to start to believe that about yourself. And so that's sort of like what ended up happening. And it was, I mean, it's basically been, what, 2 years of training that out of not just me, but, you know, a couple of the guys as well that have been here since my rookie year all the way till now.
Damn. So Mike McDaniel, very much a progressive thinker and comfortable, you know, giving love to young players and encouraging young players. And Tua saying that he, and intimating that several others, did not respond well to the tough talk of one Brian Flores. Interesting. To me, I found it concurrently interesting with this cut that I heard, what, a week and a half ago when Caleb Williams was at the press conference and was being asked about how the coaches are dealing with him here at Bears camp. And what has gone well for Caleb Williams at Bears camp? Here is that piece of tape from about a week and a half ago.
Even, you know, through text message, call, even on the practice field, them just believing, seeing, and, you know, seeing the vision that we all have, and you know, being graceful with me, knowing that, you know, I'm pretty tough on myself, but, you know, they see right through it and understand that. So, you know, it's been big for me. Like I said, having these guys around me. And then being graceful, texting me, reaching out, calling me on the practice field, coming over, you know, congratulating when things go good and then when things don't go our way or whatever case may be, you know, coming over and saying whatever they have to say, and encouraging.
So he was asked just before that, what has been good? It's encouragement and grace from the coaches. And there's the follow up and the response on how that encouragement and grace has happened. And the key thing in there to me, Ant, is him saying, they know I'm pretty hard on myself. So it's a good leader who can look at a kid, quarterback or not, and realize that kid is working his ass off and he's really hard on himself and he's doing so many of the right things. He doesn't need me to pile on. It is your job to psychologically understand what you're dealing with and not just bring a, I am a tough MF-er and this is how we coach and you will deal with it and adjust to me approach as a coach. So I wanted to get, you know, I really like that thought process when it comes to dealing with the modern evolved athlete. Some people are already therapized. Some people are already working hard and beating the crap out of themselves and are aware of it and know that they need the encouragement and the grace.
And, you know, it could be overly simplistic to just look at it and say there's sort of one right way to coach the modern athlete, but you know, society has evolved over decades and people develop differently. People respond to stimulus differently now than they did generations ago. And I don't think it takes a big mental leap to recognize that and to appreciate it. While at the same time, you know, I mean, it doesn't mean that a coach who's really hard on his players can't still have success in modern football.
No.
Not every coach is going to be cut from the same cloth. But, you know, as far as the just where we're at as a society these days, you're not usually going to be able to reach the modern athlete in the same way as you did decades ago. It's just things have evolved beyond that point.
You got to be more communicative and intuitive than you used to need to be.
Mm-hmm.
You got to actually try to build relationships with these guys and figure out what makes them tick. You can't come in just trying to rule the roost with an iron fist and do your Bill Belichick impression and think that it's going to go just fine.
And I mean,
with
by all accounts, Brian Flores is just he's a hard guy.
That's
in
him.
General. You know, a really good football mind who's a hard guy.
Isn't there a commonality, though, to these people, these former Belichick assistants doing their Bill impression? Matt Patricia getting laughed out of the Philadelphia Eagles defensive room?
And I don't know that Matt Patricia is legitimately a hard guy. He, like Marty Morningweg, wasn't legitimately a hard guy. But I've been around guys who just try to do an impression. I think Brian Flores is legitimately a hard guy.
Okay, well, that's
who
interesting.
Didn't suit Tua.
Yeah, so because Patricia clearly was trying to be that way and thought he needed to be that way. He was doing a Belichick impression.
Right.
You think Flores is legitimately this guy, but he's also been had it reinforced by seeing Belichick's success and and seeing Brady respond well, because Brady happens to be a guy who responds well to coaching like that.
And sometimes it's you're responding well in spite of that not being the type of reinforcement that perhaps suits you best. But sure, there's some guys who respond well or respond best to hard coaching. But for Tua, like there's sort of this assumption that's now there where Tua has gone public with this. And so people are wondering, like, oh, well, is Tua soft? And, you know, how come he can't handle this? And my coach used to call me outside my name. And Tua, if you know anything about Tua's background, Tua's upbringing, Tua's father was extremely hard on him, on his brother Talia. Like he had a dad who ruled with it with a fairly iron fist. He was not some coddled young kid as an athlete. Tua was up, waking up in the morning. Tua had corporal punishment. Tua was putting extra work in with his dad to become the guy that he is right now, the Heisman Trophy caliber collegiate career, national championship winning guy, now one of the highest paid quarterbacks in football, despite the limited physical stature and abilities that he possesses, because he has worked his tail off, born from the iron fist that his dad ruled with.
Well, it's interesting because I don't know that I would describe Carl Williams as ruling with an iron fist, but he and his son did share a plan and shared a vision that they worked on together.
Right.
And so maybe there's a little bit of commonality there. But a texter says that in that Lebatard conversation, Tua also talked about Nick Saban driving him hard, and that some people are better at it, you know, at driving hard, because there's a little bit of an empathy there. There's a little bit of a humanity
there. I have very much had that experience with coaches. I mean, you know, even just specifically with D-line coaches, like Charles Haley was my D-line coach in Detroit with the Lions, Hall of Fame player, amazing teacher of the position, but just a jerk. And communicated like a jerk, was very hard on us, demanding of us, and, you know, didn't have a lot of positive reinforcement that was coupled with that. Whereas Bill Johnson, my D-line coach with the Atlanta Falcons, was demanding, was hard, not demeaning necessarily, but a very hard coach and a demanding guy, but also could love you up and could let you know when you were doing great and felt like he was in it with you. And when you can combine those two things effectively, then it can make you a more versatile and impactful leader.
That's it, man. That's it right there. And I don't know if Mike McDaniel has enough hard ass in him.
Right.
But like it goes back when we're looking at leaders. I'll tell you this right now. I mean, having the ability to tell somebody the truth and not have them want to punch you in the face is how Mark DeRosa has described being a baseball manager, and I like that. And I keep thinking about A.J. Pruszynski, who I think everybody would want to punch in the face.
Oh, man,
for the White
Sox. Frequently wanted to punch Charles in the face.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, man, so often.
And he did not get the best out of you.
I mean, at times, yes. But being really demanding can push people. It can drive people. It's not like it's incapable of getting results. Is it the desired results you're hoping for? Does everyone respond to that sort of stimulus in the best way? But, you know, hard coaching can work. I'm not going to sit and act like it can't.
I hear you. All right, it's interesting. We're getting somewhere.
Yeah.
Now we're getting somewhere with Spiegs and Ann Heron on 670 The Score. Let's hear from Chris Emma with everything you need to know about Bears practice today, including Matt Eberflus on the starters or lack thereof on Thursday night. It's The Score.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
So yesterday, this sound surfaced from the Miami Dolphins quarterback, Tua Tagovailoa.
That should be the theme song for a Skibbity Bobbity, by the way.
You think so?
All I do is win.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah. I have all Skibbity. I don't know how they do in Nashville. I don't know whether they do middays or afternoons. I don't even know. When does Skibbity Boppity work? I don't know. I'll ask.
You got to start scatting, man. I'm trying to tell you.
Skibbity Boppity. I'll ask. I can scat a little bit.
I know you can.
I'll scat for you during the break.
I got faith in you.
Yeah. Thank you, man. I appreciate that. You're the one. So
it's just a good thing to have in your bag. You know, if you got a little scat in your bag, that's good.
Oh, I thought you meant Anthony's faith is a good thing to have in my bag. Because it is. He's a good man.
I carry my faith with me at all times.
You do? Well, yeah.
It never leaves me.
It's healthy, right?
Yes.
Look at you.
Aside from you heathens. I mean, you guys are a little different.
Whoa. Who are you calling a heathen?
Are you not a heathen?
This is off the air. Off the air, sir.
We will discuss. To define these things.
We need to define that. We need to define that. No, I don't believe I would qualify.
Pegged wrong. All right, I had you pegged wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it might have been different about 6-7 months ago, but that's another conversation. Yeah, it's another conversation for another time. It's interesting, right?
Very.
It's a tease.
Color me intrigued.
Consider that a tease for you and I to talk about off the air. Stop derailing
my
football
apologies.
Conversations.
Skibbity bobbity.
I want to talk about Tua.
Skibbity bobbity.
And what he said to Dan Le Batard about his coach now, Mike McDaniel, and his previous coach, Brian Flores.
To put it in simplest terms, if you woke up every morning and I told you you suck at what you did, that you don't belong doing what you do, that you shouldn't be here, that this guy should be here, that you haven't earned this right, and then you have somebody else come in and tell you, dude, you are the best fit for this. Like, you are accurate. You are the best whatever. You are this. You are that. Like, how would it make you feel listening to one or the other? You see what I'm saying? And then you hear it. You hear it, regardless of what it is, the good or the bad. And you hear it more and more. You start to actually believe that. I don't care who you are. You can be the president of the United States. You have a terrible person that's telling you things that you don't want to hear, or that you probably shouldn't be hearing, you're going to start to believe that about yourself. And so that's sort of like what ended up happening. And it was, I mean, it's basically been, 2 years of training that out of not just me, but, you know, a couple of the guys as well that have been here since my rookie year all the way till now.
Damn. So Mike McDaniel, very much a progressive thinker and comfortable, you know, giving love to young players and encouraging young players, and Tua saying that he, and intimating that several others, did not respond well to the tough talk of one Brian Flores. Interesting. To me, I found it concurrently interesting with this cut that I heard, a week and a half ago when Caleb Williams was at the press conference and was being asked about how the coaches are dealing with him here at Bears camp. And what has gone well for Caleb Williams at Bears camp? Here is that piece of tape from about a week and a half ago.
Even, you know, through text message, call, even on the practice field, them just believing, seeing, and, you know, seeing the vision that we all have, and you know, being graceful with me, knowing that, you know, I'm pretty tough on myself, but, you know, they see right through it and understand that. So, you know, it's been big for me. Like I said, having these guys around me, and then being graceful, texting me, reaching out, calling me on the practice field, coming over, you know, congratulating when things go good and when things don't go our way or whatever the case may be, you know, coming over and saying whatever they have to say, and encouraging.
So he was asked just before that, what has been good? It's encouragement and grace from the coaches. And there's the follow-up and the response on how that encouragement and grace has happened. And the key thing in there to me, Ant, is him saying, they know I'm pretty hard on myself. So it's a good leader who can look at a kid, quarterback or not, and realize that kid is working his ass off and he's really hard on himself and he's doing so many of the right things. He doesn't need me to pile on. It is your job to psychologically understand what you're dealing with and not just bring I am a tough MF-er and this is how we coach and you will deal with it and adjust to me approach as a coach. So I wanted to get, you know, I really like that thought process when it comes to dealing with the modern evolved athlete. Some people are already therapized. Some people are already working hard and beating the crap out of themselves and are aware of it and know that they need the encouragement and the grace.
And, you know, it could be overly simplistic to just look at it and say there's sort of one right way to coach the modern athlete, but you know, society has evolved over decades, and people develop differently. People respond to stimulus differently now than they did generations ago, and I don't think it takes a big mental leap to recognize that and to appreciate it. While at the same time, you know, I mean, it doesn't mean that a coach who's really hard on his players can't still have success in modern football.
No.
Not every coach is going to be cut from the same cloth. But, you know, as far as the just where we're at as a society these days, you're not usually going to be able to reach the modern athlete in the same way as you did decades ago. It's just things have evolved beyond that point.
You got to be more communicative and intuitive than you used to need to be.
Mm-hmm.
You got to actually try to build relationships with these guys and figure out what makes them tick. You can't come in just trying to rule the roost with an iron fist and do your Bill Belichick impression and think that it's going to go just fine.
And I mean,
everybody.
By all accounts, Brian Flores is just he's a hard guy.
That's
in
him.
General. You know, a really good football mind who's a hard guy.
Isn't there a commonality, though, to these people, these former Belichick assistants doing their Bill impression? Matt Patricia getting laughed out of the Philadelphia Eagles defensive room?
And I don't know that Matt Patricia is legitimately a hard guy. He, like Marty Morningweg, wasn't legitimately a hard guy. But I've been around guys who just try to do an impression. I think Brian Flores is legitimately a hard guy.
Okay, well, that's interesting.
Didn't suit Tua.
Yeah, so because Patricia clearly was trying to be that way and thought he needed to be that way. He was doing a Belichick impression.
Right.
You think Flores is legitimately this guy, but he's also had it reinforced by seeing Belichick's success and and seeing Brady respond well, because Brady happens to be a guy who responds well to coaching like that.
And sometimes it's you're responding well in spite of that not being the type of reinforcement that perhaps suits you best. But sure, there's some guys who respond well or respond best to hard coaching. But for Tua, like there's sort of this assumption that's now there where Tua has gone public with this. And so people are wondering, like, oh, well, is Tua soft? And, you know, how come he can't handle this? And my coach used to call me outside my name. And Tua, if you know anything about Tua's background, Tua's upbringing, Tua's father was extremely hard on him, on his brother Talia. Like he had a dad who ruled with a fairly iron fist. He was not some coddled young kid as an athlete. Tua was up, waking up in the morning. Tua had corporal punishment. Tua was putting extra work in with his dad to become the guy that he is right now, the Heisman Trophy caliber collegiate career, national championship winning guy, now one of the highest paid quarterbacks in football, despite the limited physical stature and abilities that he possesses, because he has worked his tail off, born from the iron fist that his dad ruled with.
Well, it's interesting because I don't know that I would describe Carl Williams as ruling with an iron fist, but he and his son did share a plan and shared a vision that they worked on together.
Right.
And so maybe there's a little bit of commonality there. But a texter says that in that Lebatard conversation, Tua also talked about Nick Saban driving him hard, and that some people are better at it, you know, at driving hard, because there's a little bit of an empathy there. There's a little bit of a humanity
there. I have very much had that experience with coaches. I mean, you know, even just specifically with D-line coaches, like Charles Haley was my D-line coach in Detroit with the Lions, Hall of Fame player, amazing teacher of the position, but just a jerk. And communicated like a jerk, was very hard on us, demanding of us, and, you know, didn't have a lot of positive reinforcement that was coupled with that, whereas Bill Johnson, my D-line coach with the Atlanta Falcons, was demanding, was hard, not demeaning necessarily, but a very hard coach and a demanding guy, but also could love you up and could let you know when you were doing great and felt like he was in it with you. And when you can combine those two things effectively, then it can make you a more versatile and impactful leader.
That's it, man. That's it right there. And I don't know if Mike McDaniel has enough hard ass in him.
Right.
But like it goes back when we're looking at leaders. I'll tell you this right now. I mean, having the ability to tell somebody the truth and not have them want to punch you in the face is how Mark DeRosa has described being a baseball manager, and I like that. And I keep thinking about A.J. Pruszynski, who I think everybody would want to punch in the face.
Oh, man,
for the White
Sox. Frequently wanted to punch Charles in the face.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, man, so often.
And he did not get the best out of you.
I mean, at times, yes. But being really demanding can push people. It can drive people. It's not like it's incapable of getting results. Is it the desired results you're hoping for? Does everyone respond to that sort of stimulus in the best way? But, you know, hard coaching can work. I'm not going to sit there and act like it can't.
I hear you. All right, it's interesting. We're getting somewhere.
Yeah.
Now we're getting somewhere. With Spiegs and Ann Heron on 670 The Score. Let's hear from Chris Emma with everything you need to know about Bears practice today, including Matt Eberflus on the starters or lack thereof on Thursday night. It's The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.